Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Consultant, obstetrician and gynaecologist Professor Shane Higgins is with me in studio today from the National Maternity Hospital at Holles Street. Shane, good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us.
087 1400 106, that is the WhatsApp number. I just want to mention before we start this conversation today that we are talking about miscarriage and stillbirth, and I know that for some of our listeners it's a sensitive and a difficult conversation, so I just want to flag that in advance. But if you do want to share your own maybe experience with us or thoughts, you can drop us an email. Either it's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. I think we're definitely, in the first instance, Shane, we're talking much more though about miscarriage, which I think has to be a good thing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Indeed it is. In fact, you know, couples that I sit in front of who are understandably traumatized by the fact that they've had a miscarriage and perhaps think that they're the only people in the world who have it, I encourage them to speak to friends and relatives and see just how common it is. And I think they take some solace from that fact, but it is still a very traumatic time for couples. But yeah, we are doing a lot more talking. It's in the press recently as well. So all very relevant and important.
And just on that, I mean, we are following the North's lead, I should say, with the paid leave being provided now for the first time for women who suffer an early miscarriage.
Absolutely. And proper. Rightly so. I think it's, you know, as I said, it's a very traumatic time for couples, not just the woman who's having the miscarriage, but, you know, everyone's vested in the pregnancy. So it's a traumatic for everyone and very emotional. And I think they need to recognise that fact and grieve appropriately and take the time to do so.
How many pregnant women will have to deal with this?
Well,
are there figures around it?
Yeah, there are. For patients who have a positive test, who are at 6, 7, 8 weeks, the risk is still in the region of 10% that they will, that 10% of that population will have a miscarriage.
Of the 6 to 8 weeks?
Patients who get to 6 to 8 weeks and beyond. There are patients then who have a home test and followed by a late period, or a late period without even doing the home test, who think they're pregnant. That increases the number more again. But for those patients who've had the test, who have started to think about it, who are starting to prepare, it's about 10%.
Just to give me the difference between miscarriage and stillbirth. The miscarriage is the loss of pregnancy
up to 24 weeks.
Up to 24 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And then after 24 weeks, if you lose a baby and it passes away either in utero or ex utero, it's a stillbirth or neonatal loss.
And I assume there's no rhyme or reason to this, is there?
Well, there are. I mean, but, you know, there's as many causes as you can possibly think of. There's hormonal causes, there's chromosomal abnormalities, genetic conditions. There's lots of different causes, underlying maternal medical disorders, patients who, you know, substance abuse, smoking, alcohol, overconsumption, they're all associated with an increased risk of miscarriage. Advanced maternal age is associated with an increased risk of miscarriage for some of the reasons I've already just mentioned. But there are processes in place and there are clinics now dedicated to investigating couples who've had pregnancy loss, not just one, because that is unfortunately so common that we'd be investigating most of the population. But if you're defined as a recurrent miscarrier, which is two or more consecutive pregnancy losses, then you're eligible to have investigations done. And there are clinics. We have one, a recurrent miscarriage. Yeah, we have a recurrent miscarriage clinic. We also have a clinic that's termed the TLC, which is Tender Loving Care, which is for couples who've experienced a miscarriage to be able to come back early in a subsequent pregnancy and get that additional scan that they need for that, you know, reassurance that everything is going well.
And do you have to be a patient to Holles Street to avail of that?
Well, you have to be referred to Holles Street, but we don't have a defined referral base, as in we will take patients. Now, there's waiting lists for different clinics, but, you know, patients can be referred to that clinic,
Yeah, but as you said, there's other recurrent miscarriage
there
hubs.
There should be another. I certainly assume the other two Dublin maternity hospitals would have a dedicated service like we have,
So that would allow for people to be eligible to be investigated.
And to be investigated,
And probably
treated,
worth doing.
And treated. And I think that, you know, patients often feel there's nothing that can be offered. I mean, there's quite liberal use of medications like progesterone and aspirin in couples, or for couples, or for women who've had a pregnancy loss. And it's often started very early on, support therapy for patients, particularly in the first trimester.
So the early miscarriage, that's what happens in the first 12 weeks.
That's first trimester, yes. Yeah. That's where most miscarriages will arise.
And then late miscarriages?
Would be from that 12 weeks, 14 weeks, up to about 24 weeks.
Okay. What are the signs that you're having a miscarriage?
For particularly for early miscarriage, the commonest sign is bleeding. and pain, crampy lower abdominal pain and bleeding would be the two commonest signs. Tragically, however, there are patients who come for their first scan at 12 weeks, and it's only then that they're informed that the baby's heartbeat has stopped. And that's what we refer to as a missed miscarriage, where there has been no overt signs that the patient's having problems with the pregnancy.
And you might only find that out during the scan.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. You might only find that out.
And why, why is that?
Well, I suppose patients become aware of the symptoms and signs, and that's what worries them. That's what causes them the anxiety. That's why they go and get a scan. But if you've actually been feeling quite well, and often patients, when I say feeling quite well, you have all the symptoms of pregnancy. You've got the nausea, perhaps the vomiting. And those symptoms can persist despite the fact that the pregnancy has ended. So patients will often think everything's going okay because they've no bleeding, no pain. They come for their scan. And unfortunately, it's only then that they're told that that's not the case. Mm.
If you experience a miscarriage, are you more likely to experience perhaps a second or third?
Not unless you fall into that category of a recurrent miscarrier. So that's the two or three consecutive spontaneous pregnancy losses. That definition has changed recently from 3 to 2. But it's only then that your risk of a miscarriage increases with the next pregnancy. If you've only had one miscarriage, your risk is the same as if you'd never been pregnant before.
Okay. Just to give you some of the texts coming in, Shane, about this today. It's 087 1400 106 is the number. Listener says they had a miscarriage in May. I'm wondering, when does Shane suggest that we might start to try again? We desperately want a second child. We're actually very upset about the whole experience.
And that's very understandable. Yeah. And I think that there are two issues. One is grieving for the loss of the pregnancy they've just had a miscarriage with. And then I would always encourage patients to leave at least one full menstrual cycle where they grow the lining of the uterus and shed the lining of the uterus before they start, because you want as receptive an environment as possible. And we talk about hostile environments. If you've just had surgery to remove the tissue, leave at least one menstrual cycle before you start trying again.
Will you tell us a little bit more? And I appreciate this can be, you know, difficult and quite graphic for listeners. But
sure.
What's actually happening to the body when you're having a miscarriage?
Well, what you're trying to do, what the body is trying to do, is expel the contents of the uterus from the body. And that's why you're getting bleeding, because the pregnancy is separating, pain because the uterus is contracting in an attempt to expel. Now, that's what happens sometimes, is that patients will have what's referred to as a complete miscarriage, where they pass everything and an ultrasound scan will reveal an empty uterus and that's it. They don't need to do anything further. Unless, of course, you have an underlying suspicion that it might be an ectopic, in which case it takes you in a completely different pathway. Some patients will pass some of the tissue, and that's called an incomplete miscarriage. And they'll often either require medical management to remove the rest, which is taking tablets, or a surgical procedure. And then there's the missed miscarriage, where all the pregnancy tissue is still in the uterus, and again, managed either medically or surgically to remove the tissue.
So there's two different, the medical medication management of it and
yes,
surgical management as
and
well.
And the medication management works most of the time, not all the time. And therefore, some of those patients will still require a surgical procedure or a second round of medication. But the problem with it, and not a problem per se, is that it can take some days for it to happen. Whereas if you are fortunate to be able to get a surgical procedure done, it puts some finality on the physical element of what you're going through.
Okay. Listener tells me, I'm currently 12 weeks pregnant. I'm terrified of miscarrying. I always hear the 1 in 4 stats on pregnancy loss. So I'm wondering now, at this stage, is it safe to tell friends?
Well, that's traditionally the time at which couples do tell their friends and family.
It's a personal decision too, though, isn't it?
Very much a personal decision. And some patients will wait a little bit longer. But if you've gotten to 12 weeks, if you've had your booking scan, if everything looks absolutely fine, then yes, you're pretty safe to tell your friends and family.
Yeah. If you've had an early preterm baby, I'm wondering, what are the chances of having another preterm baby?
Well, that's a very good question. So your risks are increased because you've had one preterm baby. And it's very important, if you've had a preterm birth, that you are referred to a preterm clinic, a dedicated preterm service. Again, one we have at Hollis Street, where they will take a very detailed history, perhaps do some investigations, some scans of your uterus for the shape, of your cervix for the length, either before or early on in a subsequent pregnancy, to see if there's any underlying reason why you might have delivered early. So there's, again, like with miscarriage, there are lots of reasons why somebody might have a pregnancy deliver early. One of the conditions that we specifically look for is a condition called cervical incompetence, where the cervix is weak. And therefore, once you get to a certain gestational age, the pregnancy essentially just falls out. And it's very important that if that was suspected in the previous pregnancy, then you're monitored very closely with cervical length measurements, with progesterone, and possibly with the insertion of a cerclage, a stitch around the cervix to try and keep the cervix closed in the later stages of pregnancy. So again, if you've had a preterm birth, seek out a preterm clinic.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I wasn't aware of the preterm clinics or the recurrent, you know, hubs that you've talked about. And, and it is worth, you know, listeners being aware of that, isn't it?
It is. So, I mean, if you've had a problem with the previous pregnancy, first port of call again would always be your GP. But the GPs are very much clued into what's available in your local hospital. I mean, we have a GP liaison committee at the National Maternity Hospital where every 2 months we meet with a group of GPs. We bring them up to speed on new services. They ask us specific questions about the services we offer so that everyone is singing from the same hymn sheet. They know what we offer and therefore they can refer appropriately to the various clinics that we do hold.
087-1400-106 is the number if you have a question for a consultant obstetrician, Shane Higgins, here this afternoon. This listener is 42, Shane. They've had two miscarriages last year. They've now been struggling to get pregnant ever since. Nothing was seen on the scans as a problem. I already have a 4-year-old daughter and I had no problems getting pregnant on the last two occasions. It was fairly easy, but I now just can't understand why I'm struggling to get pregnant at this stage. Is there anything I can do or take?
Well, I suppose the first thing to say, at 42, there are certain factors that we appreciate. First of all, you're going to find it more difficult to conceive. Secondly, your risk of having a miscarriage is increased. And thirdly, the risk of having a baby with a chromosomal abnormality is increased. And they're all related to the maternal age. And regardless of your age, as you get older, that risk does increase. So for couples who are in their 40s who have had miscarriages, there will be a suspicion that these are related to chromosomal abnormalities. And therefore, there are ways, I'm not saying they're easy, but there are ways in which you can circumvent that risk by saying, I'll go down the route of IVF and I'll have pre-implantation genetic testing done on the embryos to ensure that before they're reinserted into the body that they are chromosomally normal. That's a way of increasing the chances of having a successful pregnancy, but certainly not guaranteeing that. But there's nothing you can do apart from having the tests done that I mentioned earlier, the recurrent miscarriage tests, perhaps using aspirin, progesterone in a subsequent pregnancy for support. But unfortunately, if there is a chromosomal abnormality, there's a significant risk that that will end in miscarriage.
And for that texter, who should they best, like, are they at the stage of an IVF clinic or representative? Yes. Is that who they should go to?
Yeah, but again, if they go to their GP and speak to the GP about it, the GP will put them in the right direction. If they've got an obstetrician or a gynecologist who's more of a generalist than an IVF specialist, speak to them. Get their thoughts on whether you should go down that route at this point in time or not.
And just briefly on this texter, because I want to get them in before we finish up. This listener says, my wife had to have a DNC after miscarrying. It was absolutely awful. And as a partner, I felt totally hopeless.
Yeah, so I don't refer to it as a DNC. I know what the listener is referring to. Yeah. We refer to it as an ERPC, which is an evacuation of retained products of conception. And that's the surgical approach to managing a miscarriage, or whether it's complete or incomplete, incomplete or missed. It's a surgical procedure, which, you know, again, some patients would desperately prefer to avoid, but for some patients it's necessary. For some patients it's perhaps beneficial because it allows you to send the tissue to the laboratory to ensure there was nothing wrong with the pregnancy, whether it's at a placenta level or a chromosomal level. So there are benefits of doing the surgical procedure. I don't quite understand what exactly went wrong or what happened at that ERPC. But, you know, a hospital like any of the three Dublin maternity hospitals will do 4 ERPCs a day, tragically, on patients who've had miscarriages. So it's a very common procedure.
All of our conversations with Shane Higgins about maternity and fertility, they're all on the Go Loud app. You can subscribe there to Lunchtime Live. Professor Shane Higgins from the National Maternity Hospital. Shane, thanks a million for joining us on the programme today.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.